Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's time for the Friendship Show. Join the conversation. Every week brings a full hour of real issues, stimulating discussion, and the chance to visit with old and new friends. Sponsored by Friendship Shelter, reaching out to rebuild lives for over 26 years, right here in Laguna Beach, California.
Good morning. You're listening to the Friendship Show, right here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. I'll be your host for the next 60 minutes of community-supported radio. This show, The Friendship Show, is brought to you by Friendship Shelter, reaching out to rebuild lives for more than 26 years right here in Laguna Beach, California. I want to say good morning and hello to Caleb Scott. Caleb is, if you follow the show, Caleb is kind of our international correspondent. And originally this morning, he was going to get off of a plane from the country of Jordan yesterday, and then he was going to come and be our guest on the radio show to talk about, I don't know, he's been traveling and doing good things in the world for probably the last 6 or 7 months, maybe even longer. But we sort of underestimated what traveling for 7 months and flying back from Jordan, the toll that that takes. So we weren't able to have Caleb on the show this morning. We're going to get him in here as soon as we possibly can once he's had a chance to rest up. But we have a great staff here at the radio station. When it became apparent that we couldn't get Caleb here this morning, I said, does anyone know where Dr. Andrea Dearhart is? She's the founder of The Heart Way. She's been a guest on the show in the past. See if you can find her. Our staff tracked her down in San Francisco. She was up there. She was on her way to Los Angeles. I said, Dr. Dearhart, could you please stop by and be a guest on Friendship Show on Saturday morning? And of course, she said, I would love to. So we found her in San Francisco. She was on her way to LA. But right after this, she's going to be on the Friendship Show.
Oh, yeah, baby. Like a fool, I went and stayed too long. I'm wondering if your love's still strong.
You're listening to The Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. Dr. Andrea Dearhart is here. Just got in from San Francisco last night. Good morning, doctor.
Sweet morning to you too, Mark.
Okay, so that's the first reason I love having you here. Who says sweet morning to anyone? Makes my day. I'm already smiling. How are you doing this morning? I know you were up in San Francisco. You were supposed to be somewhere else. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm doing great. It's great to be home. I was up in San Francisco supporting my sister who's working through breast cancer, and she's such an inspiration. It warmed my heart and tickled to be so close to her at this time.
For people who may not be aware, you're the founder of an organization called The Heart Way. And sort of the mission, the tag of The Heart Way is...
The Heart Way is a nonprofit organization, and our work is about embracing life and honoring death in our community.
You have sometimes, in some places, been identified under the moniker of a death doula. What is that? What's a death doula?
That's a great place to start, because some of us, when we hear the word doula, we think of, oh, a birth doula, which is a midwife and a birthing coach and someone that helps to bring life into this world. A death doula is the same, is someone helping to birth someone into death, companioning, supporting. Doula is a Greek word, the foundational word, and a doula is a woman who serves those that are dying, although a doula can be any person supporting those at the end of life.
So there are doulas. There are all kinds of doulas, and you happen to be a death doula. Can I be honest with you?
Always.
It sounds grim.
I know it sounds grim, but it is absolutely not grim. In fact, one of the things people often approach me with that grim look, or you do what? And they say, isn't that depressing? It's farthest thing from being depressing. It's inspirational. And a doula is really a coach, a companion, a support. And there are many aspects of this work, from advocacy to holding hands to pet therapy to love to skills to spiritual and emotional support.
You didn't set out to be a death doula. I'm assuming, I could be wrong, but this is just sort of where the journey has led you to assume this extremely important position, I would describe it as. But how did you start your professional life? What is your background?
It actually started when I was 6 years old, and I used to hide under the covers with my dog because I was scared of death. And I always wanted my companion to go with me. And I couldn't tolerate that at that moment. That led me in my early 20s to volunteer for a hospice as a volunteer so I can overcome my fear of death. And I did when my first hospice calls them patient died in my arms. And that started the trajectory. My educational background is sociology, psychology. My doctorate is in mythology and depth psychology. All the work focused on death, dying, and beyond with cultures and mythologies and religions from all over the world.
Really? That's what you got your PhD in? Was death from different cultures around the world?
Depth psychology and mythology.
Depth. What is that? Explain
depth
that
to us. Depth psychology
was
founded by Carl Jung, and it is the study of the unconscious. So it's a study of the psyche and soul. And the soul would be the closest thing that we have to maybe even understanding death within our being. Most of the work in psychology is on the conscious mind, cognitions, ego mind.
You have a PhD in soul mythology?
I like that. Let's call it that.
Wow. I'm way in over my head already. When you say that you're a death doula and that's the work that you do with the heart way, you provide different kinds of services basically for not just for people who are at the end of their life, but for the people around them who are sharing that experience with them. And after that person has passed, do you use the word, how do you describe that event? Do you call it death? Do you call it passing?
All of the above, but I like to use the word death. Because that's what it is, and it allows us to enter it where it is. And we work with those before, during, and after death.
Right. So you work with families after the person has died.
Yeah. And during as well, because this experience of dying for our loved ones, of course, can be traumatic as well as all-consuming and unfathomable. So a loving support by their side as well can really allow them to be fully present in the experience. And it really, really is about love and being present.
So what would be some of the specific, we can call them services or techniques that you use to help people be present during this part of their life?
Happy to share that. One of the things that I do want to say is everybody dies differently. So there is no cookie cutter recipe, if you will, for being present to someone at the end of life. But being present is the key. Learning how to be present to the emotions, the pain, without trying to discount or redirect the emotions. Creating a sacred space. And to be very honest, that's really about being, not doing. And that's hard in our culture because we're a doing culture. So to be able to sit and hold somebody's hand, allow them to cry, maybe even cry yourself, while they're moving through whatever emotions they're moving, is probably one of the greatest gifts we can give to another human being, whether we're dying or not.
Isn't that, because of the culture that we live in, like you said, you've studied this kind of culture from all different places in the world. Is that the most difficult thing, really, is that you finally come up against this thing that you cannot fix?
Yes, and what we come up against is helplessness, because we are helpless in this moment to take away someone's pain. Yeah, we've got medications to take away someone's pain and to stop this process. And I think one of the most difficult things we do as a human being is bearing witness to suffering, especially with someone that we love. I can't think of anything more difficult in life
than to watch someone suffer and know that there's nothing you can do about it.
And that helplessness is gut-wrenching.
So I understand. So the key is to be present and to be. How do you get people ready for that? Because I have to say, you know, in my experience, there have been things that have happened where I've said, like, okay, like, I have to show up and be open. Mm-hmm. And try to lead with my heart in this situation. And I oftentimes have to get help from other people to do that, to say, this is going to be really hard. My inclination is to run like hell.
Absolutely.
How do I stay there? How do I get to that place?
First of all, it's okay if you can't stay there the whole time. It's very hard to do. Sometimes it's talking with someone, sometimes it's holding someone, sometimes it's crying with someone, but it's allowing ourselves to feel those emotions that will allow us to step through and be present. As I sat with my sister having chemotherapy on Thursday, watching this red devil, as it's called, drug go into her body, I wept. And I held my sister's hand. And I stayed there with her. And what did we feel from that? Love. What did we feel from that? Intimacy. What did we feel from that? Life.
I really like you.
I love you too, Mark.
Isn't that right? Because in that moment, wouldn't, you know, I would think a fairly common response would be to just not even acknowledge that that's happening. We just have to get through this and grit our teeth and white knuckle it, as opposed to standing in this and saying, you're putting this horrible chemical into my sister's body, and this is how I feel about that.
Exactly. And what this says to my sister is, I love you and I see you. And you're going to be okay with this as well.
I'm right here. Mm-hmm. I'm right here. Mm-hmm. All right. After a person has died, perhaps the most difficult part is living on. Mm-hmm. What do you do with families after someone has died?
In the grief support process, the Heartway will continue to hold that hand of those loved ones as they journey through the process of grief. Again, everybody does this differently, and the emotions are all over the place. There is no cookie cutter answer for how to grieve. Everybody does it differently. So to be by someone's side and give them permission not to be over this in a month or two, it's okay if you still have your loved one's clothes in the closet a year later. What's important is engaging with their process of grief, just like holding my sister's hand, to allow them to move forward. We have to re-mythologize our whole life. Life is different without this loved one. What's the meaning now? I don't have meaning. It's devastating without this person. It needs to be rebuilt, restructured, relived, reloved. And that takes our breath away.
I was talking with someone just the other day, and they said on average a grieving process takes around 2 years. Would you agree with that? Is sort of, no, oh, really? What are you saying?
I'm saying there is no average. And when we set a marker of I should be okay in 2 years or a year, I think we set ourselves up for failure. I think what is more important is to take a look at our individual process. And if we're feeling so stuck we can't breathe, to reach out to get to the support, to get the movement that we may need in our life. I don't know where we should arrive to. Each of us has that different journey. I actually don't think there's a place to arrive to. But if we don't look at it from our perspective, I think we're going to get caught in a societal message that may or may not fit for us.
Wow. You can't disagree with that, right? Because lots of times, you know, someone who's been devastated by somebody's death, and the people around them, you know, are like, you need to get over this. You know, this has been this long now. Why are you still like this? And that can't be helpful, right? Because you're kind of just saying to that person, there's something wrong with you.
Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with you. You've had a terrible loss, and it takes as long as it takes and whatever it takes to try and move through this, however you move through it.
Yeah. There are many resources and tools to help someone. It's about reaching out. But I have an expression. It's an inside job.
I have to tell you that I just went through a process not too long. And you know, and someone, I don't know, I was talking with someone and they said, you know, what about this? What about that? You know, how can I fix this for you? And I said to them, I think this is an inside job. I think I'm going to have to do this.
But we can stand by each other's side. We can walk the walk by their side. We can hold their hands. We can hug them. We can share. We can provide resources and pragmatic skills. That's part of being a death doula as well, is it's not just holding someone's hand. There's skills. There's pragmatic information and tools and resources that can help the process from a pain management standpoint, from a psychological standpoint, from a financial standpoint. What do we do here? What do we do now? So that's where the skill of someone very trained can help, also to allow the movement of the family. My goal when I'm working with a family is to help them be as present as they can. So if that means working with insurance or an advocate in the hospital or the resources with the doctors, with hospices, to help the family be present and love each other, that's my job. And often there's a lot of need to advocate what the patients and clients and those that are dying wishes are, because there's agendas in different organizations that may be completely different. And that's where our rights are real important in my heart to be expressed.
Can I say, you know, I remember when my dad died, picking out his headstone. And of course, my mom was, you know, was incredibly devastated by my dad's death. And I remember going to pick out the marker, and you know, frankly, they're trying to sell you a really expensive marker. And I think my mom kind of got lost in this thing a little bit. Excuse me. I'm look
okay.
At you. Well, you've made me choke up a little bit. I think she kind of got lost in this thing a little bit of, if I don't buy a $5,000 headstone for my husband, that I'm not honoring my husband. And you're right. And it was like just being able to be there and saying, well, Mom, Dad wouldn't want that. Dad would be horrified to think that there was some 6-foot thing looming over him. He just wants this, doesn't he? This simple little marker that has his name on it. She's, you know, and she said, yes, I think that's what he would want. I said, that's exactly what he would want. And it's not about what this man thinks you
exactly.
should want.
And that's part of the process I would do with a family before death. What are your wishes? How do you want to die? What are your wishes after you die? And then with the family, so that somehow a process has happened, so when it's time to make those decisions, the family's being very comfortable knowing, oh, this is what our dad would have wanted and wished at this particular time. And there's more peace in letting go. Do I have time to share a quick story about that?
Go.
Working with a beautiful family not too long ago of a different culture. And I sat down with a mother. It was a large Eastern Indian family. And when I went to the house, there was always 10, 20, 30 people there. So lots of dynamics. And I know in this particular culture, there's a lot of rites at the end of death that are very different than our culture. For example, keeping the loved one's body at home after death for prayer and for visiting family members to come in and do vigil and rituals for the loved one before he or she gets sent to the mortuary for the cremation, which they witness. The body is often bathed in a milk bath. The family members dress and undress their loved ones after death. And these are things we do also for loved ones in, through the Heartways work. But it was, I wasn't sure what their belief system was, so I sat down with the wife of the man that was dying, and I said, what are some of the traditions and rituals that your family has practiced at the end of life? And she shared with me beautiful rituals, and I said, we can do those at home if you wish before he is carried away. And she looked at me in shock. Really? We can do these things? I said, yes, no problem. We'll arrange to keep him at home as long as you want. I recommend no longer than 4 or 5 days. Then the body is needing different type of support. And she was so in awe, shocked, and surprised. This is a family that was supported by hospice. But hospice doesn't right now have the time. They're very medicalized in their approach to go through these rituals that are important. So we arranged for him to be kept at home. And right before he died, I was at the house, and the family was a little stunned. There's an energy that often goes through the house right before someone's going to die. Usually it's a high anxiety. And I said to them, if it feels right, it's a good time to say goodbye, to let him go, if you are able to do that. One by one, they filed in to say goodbye, and he died with the eldest son in the room. When I came, I was called right after he died to come for rituals. And a few days later, weeks later, after ceremonies and rituals and burials, I'm still doing grief work with this family. She said she was so grateful that they were able to say goodbye, keep him at home for a day or two to practice rituals, that she is totally at peace with that process.
And isn't that, I mean, that is how we can have, we can't control the outcome, but we can control the process.
Yes, we can.
We can do that. I think the last time you were on the show, wasn't my mom part of the show?
She was.
Did she call in?
She did.
Because my mom is a nurse and a grief counselor. Yeah. And I would just say, Mom, Andrea's on the show. I'm pretty sure she's listening. She better be listening. Andrea's on the show. If you want to call in, give us a call, Mom. It's 949-715-5936. If you don't want to call in, that's fine. Send me a text if you have any questions for Andrea. That goes for anyone. The Death Doula is here in the studio. If you have any questions, give her a call, 949-715-5936. Dr. Dearheart, can we take a quick break?
Sure.
All right, let's do that, and we'll be back right after this. You're listening to The Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM.
And if you
Welcome back. This is indeed the Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. I'm your host this morning. Our guest in the studio is our very own death doula, Dr. Andrea Dearhart. Thanks for being here again this morning, Doctor.
My pleasure.
All right. I think before, what were we talking about before we took that break? Do you remember? I don't. It's fine if you don't, right? It's like, I don't know, that was a minute and a half ago.
We had such a conversation in between. But we were talking about grief, and we were talking about what the death doula process might be for someone.
All right. You're not alone in the studio this morning. You have you've brought a companion with you.
Yes, I have.
Who do you have with you?
This is Daisy Dearhart, and she is my service dog.
Hello, Daisy.
Just perked up as you said that.
Yeah.
And she's my pet therapist, and mine personally, as well as my clients. And I have her on the street in her little vest sometimes, and she's a sweet little Cavalier Spaniel. If you want to see pictures of her, you can go find me on Facebook under Andrea Dearhart or The Heart Way.
She's adorable.
And
what's her role?
Her role is, her service is love. Her job is to climb in bed and love whoever is near, and it's a beautiful therapy.
I have to say, as soon as I saw her, I said to her, "Oh yeah, I want to crawl in bed with that dog."
That's her service. She's
adorable.
She does it well.
All right, Daisy. At any time, if you have something to add, please feel free to speak up. You were talking a little bit about hospice care, and you said that part of the work that you do is necessary because hospices, frankly, don't have time to do the work that you do. Mm-hmm. And the sort of the medicalization of the death process prevents them from doing that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about, first of all, do you work with hospices? And what do you mean by the medicalization of death and those sorts of things?
Sure, absolutely. We work with hospice for sure. They're a wonderful organization. At this point, hospice has become an extension of the medical system. I was a hospice social worker in the 90s, and I left in the early 90s when hospice really became medicalized. And my expression is, they sold their soul to the Medicare system, to the insurance system. They became part of the conglomerate of insurance agencies and pay. They needed to do that to survive. It's the way our medical system is at this particular point. I won't touch on what's the challenges of that, because that will be way more than this hour.
Right. You want to get into medical care while you're here?
But I'm very grateful for the system, because they're the best at this point on end-of-life care. A lot of you have probably heard the expression palliative care at this particular point, and that's what hospice is, a palliative care system. And palliative is focused on comfort care, not curative care. In the early 90s, what happened is they started to get paid out by Medicare, and then Medicare and other insurance companies started to dictate what services they would pay for. And that's great, because it's needed. The medications, the equipment is very expensive. Before that, the mission of hospice, coming from England, is where it originally founded, was a place of rest and healing and a place for the weary. They focused a lot on the psychological, the spiritual aspects at the end of life. They still have social workers, they still have volunteers, they still have chaplains. But because they're so medicalized, there's not enough time for those individuals to spend with the families. So, for example, a chaplain might come once a month, a social worker might come once a month, maybe twice a month. And families really need a lot more care when it comes to end-of-life issues. You know, they're also trained from a medical standpoint, so they may not have the knowledge, for example, about in-home funerals. One of my cases not too long ago, at the death side, the hospice nurse came to do the end-of-life procedure she needed to do, which is things like destroying the medications, calling the time of death, etc. And she was there, and I was there also, and she said, "Well, how did you choose a mortuary?" This family had not chosen a mortuary. They had a lot of difficulty doing this, and I had spent weeks on it. But they were where they were. And I said that the family had chosen to keep their loved one at home for a couple days. And she said, "You can't do that."
And this is where
I beg your pardon.
And this is where advocacy comes in for the family, because we've had these long discussions already. And they said, oh, with all due respect, they can keep the loved one here for up to 4 or 5 days. And there's procedures like dry ice and ways of keeping the person at a temperature that'll slow down the decompensation of the body. And she said, well, I'll have to call the health department. And I said, okay, you can call the health department. That's not a problem. It's perfectly okay, as long as you file the report for when this person died, contact the mortuary, so there's a plan in place. Those are some of the requirements. And she said, oh, I'd never had a family do this before. And they said, yeah, it's actually very, very beautiful. So that would be an example of, you know, that's just not in the scope at this particular point.
And right.
There's lots of ways for people to care for their loved ones. We have a monotheistic approach where really pluralism is more accurate.
Okay, I have a lot of questions about that story.
Sure,
first of all, why do you have to destroy the medications? That's part of death?
Yeah, that's part of the law.
You'd have to destroy whatever medications
yeah.
are there because they're...
narcotics
right.
and getting the wrong
right.
hands, etc.
Yada, yada,
unfortunately,
yada.
It's a lot of medical waste because there's a lot of money that goes down the toilet. Oops, I'm sorry. No, we don't do the toilet anymore.
Okay. So what are the logistics of that? If my loved one has died in a hospice or in a hospital and I say I want the body to come home with me, but what are the logistics of that? Who does that delivery?
Lots of ways of doing it. The Heartway will help facilitate that if we were working with families. So if someone dies in the hospital, especially a baby, which is very, very devastating, but it becomes very important and sometimes therapeutic for a mother to carry her baby home with her. So she has time to share her hopes, her dreams, her losses, and spend a couple days before she has to say goodbye to this bundle of hope and dreams and love that she won't get to see grow. So she literally can just carry her loved one out of the hospital. You let the hospital know. There has to be a mortuary contract in place. And then within 2 to 4 days or whatever the family chooses, and maybe a few hours, it doesn't matter, they would carry their little love bundle to the mortuary for final dispensation, whether that's burial or cremation.
And are you the person in that process if someone chooses to take their loved one home with them for, you said, perhaps 3, 4, 5 days, probably uh-huh. no longer than that? Do you take charge of the body at that point? Are you the person to say, this is how the body needs to be cared for so that we can keep it here?
Definitely would coach the family on that. The family members are the one that take charge. They're the one that literally carries. If it's an elder, like I had a client die in a boarding care, and his wife wanted him to come home. So I arranged for, there's beautiful organizations that move dead bodies around, whether it's a mortuary or just a delivery company that will lovingly bring a loved one, transport it from place to place. So we had him transported to home, and we set up prayer rituals, and we had a sacred space for his body in the living room, and then loved ones came and saw him. And then when they were ready to say goodbye, the mortuary came and took him to the crematorium. He was going to be cremated.
Mm-hmm. I just think that sounds so nice, doesn't it?
It can be very... very beautiful. When someone dies and we take them away right away, it's shock. Many family members, and if you've had a death before, there's a shock period. It's just natural. It's a physiological shock and an emotional shock that happens when someone dies. They're there 1 minute and then they're gone.
Right.
You just can't fathom
right,
that.
Right. And then in that moment, it's like you've been preparing for this and preparing for this for as long as you have. And then in a second, it's over.
There's no way to prepare for that. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, many of you may know, an exquisite psychiatrist that actually brought the hospice movement into the United States, did a lot of work in how we deal with death at this particular time in the medical system. And she had an expression that I use every day of my life. It feels very appropriate here. I'd like to share it. And that is, time and tears heal. Not just time and not just tears. We need both in our healing process. So when someone dies, we may have a lot of tears, but we haven't had the time to help synthesize the layers within our mind, body, and spirit to integrate all that's happened and all that this means to us in our life.
I think you hear, you know, lots of people say, you know, I want to die at home in my own bed. And then for lots of reasons that doesn't come about. Is that really possible in this day and age for someone to just die at home? Or is this like a two-step thing where people go to a hospital, they go to a hospice, the death occurs, and then there's this opportunity to come back home? Or should people be able to die in their home? And what gets in the way of that?
Absolutely, people can die at home. And that's one of the great aspects of hospice. They help that happen because they've got the medical arm of that. What gets in the way of that sometimes is our fears. Sometimes is the medical system. Just had a sad example in my heart, although my client didn't die. Was brought into a hospital, a local hospital, and for pains. And she's a 92-year-old woman, and we've had some heart conditions and a battle with pneumonia. And she's starting to let go. I don't know if that means a few weeks, a few months, or a year. And they wanted her to go to a skilled nursing facility. And the family and I wanted her to go back to the board and care, which has been her home. She has situational dementia, so in the hospital, she's really freaked out. It's very scary and sad, and she's scared, and it breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
We told the hospital we wanted her to go to board and care, and unfortunately, they manipulated the situation where she couldn't go home to a board and care, and she was sent to a skilled nursing facility where she continues to deteriorate because of this dementia and fear. Luckily, knock on wood, she's home today. After strong advocacy, because she wants to be at home to die. So
right.
It can be done. So sometimes the system gets in the way, and that's where skill sets of helping people maneuver through it. You're scared, and when a doctor says this, we go, yeah, and that may be right on what the doctor wants, but it may not be what your wishes are or your loved one wishes. So yes, we can have what we want. Sometimes it takes a little maneuvering to make that happen. But that's probably what'll bring me to tears in anything we say today. My deepest passion is that nobody dies alone or fear-laden or in an institution that they don't wish to be
right.
in.
I have to say, I have doctors in my family. So and I have doctors who are good friends,
them.
Right? So doctors are great. But I do have to say, in a couple of situations where someone was at the end of their life, and there's no going back. This is going to happen, and it's going to happen soon. People suggesting, well, we could do this. And I'm like, well, get away from me. Why would you do that now? That's not going to change anything. Do you know what I mean? Where it's just kind of like medical procedures for the sake of medical procedures. It's not going to change the outcome at all.
Doctors haven't been well trained in death and end of life. They're trained to save lives, right? So it's oxymoronic to what they do. There's a lot of beautiful work happening out there right now. Awat Gawande, who's a doctor, beautiful Indian doctor that's written a book on being mortal. Many of you have heard of it. I highly recommend reading it. The work is starting to happen to help doctors embrace life and honor death as well. Help families find that point of when they're ready to let go. The problem is, again, it's coming up, I'm sorry, cookie cutter. It isn't a cookie cutter. Every single situation is different. And we have a mass media system. So it's hard to design something where you can deal directly with individuals as they go through this unique experience. I have good friends right now that are hospicing their loved pet through death. And many people are telling them, why are you making him suffer? You should just put him down. Why do we put dogs down and we kill people? I don't know. And they're being criticized for this approach to end of life. But they're loving him, they're comforting him, they're medicating him. They want him to die a natural death at home in their arms.
Isn't this, though, wouldn't you say, sort of the hopeful thing that's going on in medicine today in America is this integration of, what I call, Western medical philosophy with alternative ways ways of approaching that. Yvonne Kane, I don't know if do you know Yvonne?
I do. Lovely.
Yvonne Kane was our guest last week, and she was talking about, because she does acupuncture and acupressure and all kinds of things. She's my health professional. Mm-hmm. She gets me tuned up once a week. And she was saying that she works with a Western medical doctor because there's knowledge that she has that works really well with the knowledge that that doctor has. And it's the intersection of those two things that allows people to have a more full, more whole approach to how they live their lives.
Absolutely. It truly is integration. So the HeartWay's job is an integration with Western medicines and all other medicines to try and provide the most full, loving life that we can lead till we take our last breath. People say, oh, you're about dying. And I say, no, I'm about living until we take our last breath. But that changes.
The role of medications, particularly pain medication at the end of life, what's your thoughts on that?
Only a couple more minutes.
No, we've got a few minutes.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah, no. Oh, are you kidding? We've got like almost 10 minutes. That's a lifetime in radio.
Awesome. Medication at the end of life serves in so many different ways. The most important to me is not the medication, but what the wishes and the desires of the person that the medications are being administered to. And sometimes that gets lost in the medical system. In other words, we have pain meds. They're awesome. There's a consequence of pain meds, and that's a level of consciousness. For some at the end of life, that's far more important. So when I'm working with hospice, I lovingly demand a real in-depth conversation with family members as well as the loved one on how these medications might operate in their body and what their choices are. And that's where your word intersection comes in, an opportunity to integrate integrative approaches to healing. Acupuncture, massage therapy, meditation, visualization, music therapy, pet therapy, cannabis, all kinds of options to bring comfort without losing a level of consciousness if that's important.
Oh, really? So would you, you might coach or help a family or an individual say, this could get painful. Here's all of the options you have to try and deal with your discomfort. And that ranges from something that's going to knock you out, right? I mean, we've all, right? Yes. We've all been and seen people in hospitals where it's like they're unconscious because of the medication that they're on. But to something like my good friend Yvonne Kane could give you acupuncture or some massage therapy.
Yes.
Snuggling and with Daisy.
Absolutely. And every person, again, reacts differently to the medication. Some want to be put under. Some want not to be aware, absolutely, and that's okay. My point isn't what we should or shouldn't do. My point is understanding what we might want to do and then be prepared to switch options because it's evolving. What works one day may not work the next day, and that's also hard for us because we want a solution. There probably isn't going to be one. There'll be many that'll work through. I've had many people die at the end of life on no medications whatsoever, and they're conscious till they take their last breath. It's quite a different experience, and it gives them an opportunity to be very present. Sometimes that's not possible. That's okay.
Isn't that the way what you said in that was what worked today? It might not work tomorrow, and we have to be willing to switch in the moment. And I think for people who listen to the show, they may know that I moonlight during the week as the associate executive director of an organization that works with homeless individuals, and they have many of them have great needs. And I think we're constantly, I think, working on that and talking through that as an organization. Where, you know, for you to say like a system would be so nice to say like this person has these problems, and you do this and this and this is the outcome. And when that doesn't work, you know, what do you do? And I think, you know, it's exactly what you said is we're going to try this. And if this doesn't work, and if it works, we're going to ride that wave as far as we can. But when it stops working, we're going to have to switch. We're going to have to do something different now.
And that's very difficult in a systematic, pragmatic culture that we have. but is absolutely crucial at the end of life in my heart. And that's why I often say that I don't have an ideology about death.
Meaning you don't have a way to do this. You're about finding the way.
And being in it.
Finding the heart way.
Yes.
Alrighty. Okay, we're getting to the end of the show. This always happens, right? We always run out of time, and I'm looking at a long list of questions here. Is there anything you want to talk about before we do run out of time that I haven't covered?
I think the message that I would want to leave for people is it really is about living, not dying. However, at the end of life, there's new circumstances, new situations, new feelings that arise, and seeking help and support may be the key to really embracing the situation and moving through it in a way to embrace life and honor death.
All right. You're growing, by the way. I don't mean you personally. But your organization.
I hope I'm growing personally. Too.
Well, I mean, I guess I didn't want to give the impression that like you're getting really big or something. But the heart way is growing. You're expanding into taking on more. You now have staff that work for you.
Yes, I'm very, very, very excited. The Heartway is a nonprofit, and we've had a beautiful physical partner in Seeds Arts and Education.
By the way, how did you find your first volunteer?
I found my first volunteer through this show.
What? Say that again.
Through this wonderful show with Mark Miller, who I adore. A woman was listening onto the show and also had seen me in yoga classes but didn't make the association with my work, and approached me one day in yoga and asked if I needed volunteers.
Are you the death doula?
Yes. And I said yes, and I would love to. So we currently have several volunteers, but two working with clients right now, one in Los Angeles and one here in Laguna Beach working hands-on with clients, and I'm appreciative of that so much. I will have a volunteer training program in September for those of you that might be interested in working with those people at the end of life or deepening your connection to life. I welcome you, and you can get that information at theheartway.org or on Facebook at the Heartway page. And feel free to call or connect anytime you wish.
Heartway.org. That's how people reach you. Theheartway.org. That's how people reach you.
Yes.
Do you work everywhere? You're up in LA? You were in San Francisco?
I have clients all over the world.
Get out. Do you really?
Yes. I have a client in Israel and on the East Coast. So those would be Skype sessions. And, you know, sometimes just a little guide will help. I have clients for a day and up to 5 years. So it's not just the end of life. I also do a lot of work with helping people in the aging process or just preparing for the end of life.
So someone could come to you and say, this is the experience that I'm having that involves death. These are the questions that I have. They could sit with you for an hour, a couple of hours, and say, thank you so much for that information. And it's been helpful, and I no longer need your services.
Absolutely. I'd be honored. And one thing that I do want to share that's important to my heart is we do not charge for services at the end of life.
That's right. I forget that about you. There's a point. That's right. That's the other reason I really like you. You work with people, and you're a professional, so you get paid for what you do up to the point where someone sort of enters the final stages of their death. And at that point, your personal commitment is that you cannot profit from that. That
we're nonprofit anyways, but no charge for services at the end of life. That's very important, and that's why we are a nonprofit. And through the generosity of the community, we're able to continue and to grow and do lots of education and advocacy. Again, my heart is about having a resource for people that they're comfortable with, that they feel they can reach out and be honest and support their path.
All right.
Money gets in the way of that in my heart.
Tabitha Uchuk was our guest last week. She's a really interesting woman, a spiritual channel is what she does. She would describe that, and I don't know if you would, but is that your sacred contract?
Yes.
All right. Now you've got me. Now I'm completely lost. You have a big fundraiser coming up.
Yes.
When is that?
It will be in November. We'll share more of it as we come. It'll be on Dia de los Muertos Day, and the theme is I See You Dying.
Come on.
Part of my work, my doctoral thesis was in death beyond denial, and part of what I think happens in that denial is we forget to see the people that are dying, and they get more lonely because they're not being seen. So this will be an art auction to express that, and keep your fingers crossed for the publication of one of my two books this year called Ellie's Ride, Death Beyond Imagination, of a journey of a child that died in my life and her imaginal descent into mythologies after life. A few things on the plate here.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, you're amazing. You're amazing, by the way. All right, you'll come back again?
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you so much, Mark.
All right, we've run out of time for this week. Our guest, Dr. Andrea Dearhart, founder of The Heart Way, keeper of everything that is peace and light. You've been listening to The Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. Up next is Tommy J and Ida May with some radio neighboring. We'll be back next week at 9 o'clock.
Thank you for tuning in to The Friendship Show. Join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. for a full hour of real issues, stimulating discussion, and the chance to visit with old and new friends right here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM.
Love rise like a river and flow for a thousand miles. Give me some.